Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm really excited to have Dan Goodstein, and he's a CEO, founder of Business Therapist, which is an interesting name, and I'm sure you'll get into that. And then also you're president of RAPA AI. Maybe you could talk a little about that, but why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Dean. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm one of these people. I started in technology. I realized very early on I was better at the business side of technology than the technical side of technology. I started my career doing go-to-market, sales, marketing for some blue chip clients, the IBMs and HPs of the world. Found myself in the media business accidentally, running local newspapers and media outlets. And then about a dozen years ago, I was able to marry the two worlds together and really run a professional association and media company that focused on technology, initially technology outsourcing and then AI and automation. More recently, that organization's got about 130,000 members globally, all coming to us for education, networking, and advice. But the world obviously changed when the pandemic happened, and I found myself just more and more speaking to startups, SMBs, founders in the community and also across my network who were really looking for help and advice and recommendations. And I launched Business Therapist to really coach and help organizations, especially the smaller ones who are either technical founders who are not necessarily as well-versed or have the bandwidth to be well-versed on the sales and marketing and go-to-market side of things, or just small local businesses where they're stuck working in the business every day and don't get a chance to work on the business too much. And I found that I really enjoyed it. It was a little bit more fulfilling being able to help an organization that's small enough that you make some impact and it puts food on their tables. That's been my journey.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's one of the most fulfilling experiences you've had helping an entrepreneur?
I think it's, somebody once said, right, the art of intelligence is to simplify something really complicated, right? We get stuck in the day-to-day of our business, especially if you're a technical business, an IT business, which I spend a lot of time with, and we get consumed by zeros and ones and features, and especially if you're the person who created the product, the things that you think are great about the product. Being able to dilute that down to a simple message that a customer gets and resonates and kind of unblock the wall that's been between them and scaling up their business is great, because there's a lot of really amazing technologies out there that never see the light of day because they're not communicated properly and marketed properly. And the ones that are, that sometimes are even inferior products, end up winning. That's always exciting.
And how is it hard for you to convince the entrepreneur? It's not about all these amazing features. It's about jobs to be done for the customer and segmenting and really focusing. Is that a hard process that you find, or how do you go about that?
It can be. I'm fortunate in the sense that I usually end up engaging with people when they've had that coming to Jesus moment. Their sales is not good, or they can't scale the business, or they've got an investor breathing down their back. At that point, as my old mentor said to me, it's always easier to sell a Bible to someone who's already religious than to try to preach the religion first. Yeah, you have people that are opinionated. It's their business. It's their baby. Sometimes it's their product that they built, and it's not always easy to convince them that the problems that they thought they were solving are not actually the problems that their customers are buying.
Yeah. And it helps to have a lot of pain. Then people are more receptive. That's for sure. And What kind of process do you go through, like when you engage with a business? How do you go about that?
Yeah, a couple different areas. If it's a small business where they're just looking for help scaling, or they're looking for kind of a sanity check on what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, we have a business health check that we run, and it goes over all the different aspects of the business: financial, market fit, sales, marketing, operations, people manage, the whole kind of list, if you will. In the larger enterprises I work with, I'm usually focused more on the sales and marketing motions. We do a messaging revamp process, which is kind of similar to what we're talking about here, around making sure not only that the message is resonating, but sometimes you have a product that is being sold to different stakeholders, right? So you may have a slightly different pitch for the CFO, who cares more about cost related things, than you would for a technical leader, right? Who's trying to, or a business leader who's trying to solve a business problem. So sometimes it's just either revamping the messaging or customizing the messaging to certain buying groups and things like that. And then the other area is sales related. So we do a pipeline building program. I usually start off like a 90-day pipeline building program to help put some fuel in the gas tank, if you will.
And that, how has AI changed all your kind of go to market with sales and marketing?
Oh, it's been a complete 180. What we were doing almost exclusively with people 3 years ago, we're doing almost exclusively with AI and automation today. As I said in a talk I did recently, there's never been a better time to be an entrepreneur. You could have the resources of a large Fortune 500 company now with the right tools and technologies. We're using a lot of AI. In fact, we've launched a product we call AI Sales Agency, which is basically the prospecting and researching and cold outreach that most people are not good at doing. And if they are, they probably don't like doing. It's a big time drain. And we've been really experimenting for about a year and a half now with a tool that does that at scale. So now you can go out to your target market, research them, send them very personalized messages that they believe was written by a human in most cases. That's how good they are. That's how customized they are. And reach out to them on multiple channels: email, LinkedIn, phone, text. So it's helping a lot of selling founders who have to do their own sales, or even sales teams that they're being asked to do everything from the prospecting and lead generation through the closing of the deal, helping them focus on what they're good at, which is usually solutioning and closing deals, and taking the monotonous chasing and very high volume outreach off their plate.
So, do you think cold calling works today? And what's your philosophy on touches, multiple channels that you talked about? And are SDRs, I know there's AI SDRs, but do you think SDRs are being successful and are AI SDRs being successful? What are your thoughts around all that?
So it depends on how you define success, right? The problem with the old model is it's no longer cost effective for a human being to cold call. Connection rates, depending on the industry, are less than 1 or 2%, right? So if you're paying somebody, especially in the US, 50, 60 grand a year, and they're making that many phone calls and they're only getting connections to less than 1%, the math just doesn't work. The ROI doesn't work. But if you can use AI to do that and call a few thousand people a day for a fraction of the price, then you don't need more than 0.5% or 1% to convert in order for it to pay for itself. That's one answer. But your bigger question, I think, is right, which is, no single channel works across the board, right? People like to engage in the channel that they like to engage in, right? We see a lot of people that will call and leave voicemails for, not necessarily call back, but their reply rate to emails is higher because they have this perception that you're chasing them down and they're going to respond to your email, let you know whether they're interested or not. We've actually moved mostly to voicemails. We actually skip the live phone call point part anyway because it's just a waste of time. And we just go straight to the voicemail because when you leave a voicemail, what do people do? They don't call people back, but they pick up their phone. Most phones, it's transcribed now on your mobile phone. And so you see the transcription and the message says something like, "Hey, I sent you an email." So they go into their email and they hit reply and they reply to the email or LinkedIn. But everybody has their own way of engaging. We're doing a lot more with WhatsApp, a lot more with SMS. You got to be in all the channels. So any strategy that is a single platform right now doesn't work. And then, of course, there's some nuances in different industries, right? Every industry is slightly different. Some are more prone to phone calls, some are impossible to get on the phone.
And what's your point of view of TikTok? Is that only for a certain market segment or could be any product, or how do you use that channel?
So I'm told by people smarter than me that everybody should be on TikTok. I am not on TikTok. We've focused really more, my focus is really more B2B. We're mostly on LinkedIn. We do some X, Twitter, and YouTube. That's mostly where we stay on social. I have some partners that are more in the B2C space. And so they're using TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. And in that space, you really have to be, it's the same principle though, in the sense that you got to be everywhere because you don't know where your consumer is going to be. There's some data out there around if you have a certain demographic, a certain age group, certain platforms are better for that than others. But I think more so, it's about where you can get the biggest percentage of market share. And so sometimes it's a new platform that, is not as well saturated where you'll actually get the bigger impact because the algorithm is promoting good quality content over a massive following like they used to.
And what's your kind of playbook to get like that front of funnel going? It seems like it's just getting harder and harder. But what could you share with the audience as your playbook to start building up some good quality leads and getting them in the funnel?
Yeah, we usually run a couple prong program. One on the cold outreach side, and that's why we got to this AI sales agency thing. You got to get to a pretty huge volume to get the conversions to work. So I think it's an important part of the strategy, but certainly it's a lower conversion rate than more relationship-based selling. So you got to have a combination. I think what we try to end up is not boiling the ocean, figuring out a couple ideal ICPs, ideal customer profiles, and then going really hard into them. So high touch, very customized outreach to those channels and to people that have access to those channels, more of a quality over quantity play. But it takes time. And the beauty of the AI tools is it allows you to bridge the gap between both worlds, which is do mass personalization, if you will, be able to send out 1,000 emails a day that are customized and researched like a human would have probably been able to send 10 or 12.
Yeah, that's great. And that's getting the good enough volume of leads coming in. I guess you have to reach out to multiple channels as you talked about, but being real focused on your ICP and personalized, is that like the core to drive a front of funnel?
Yeah, that's a big piece of it. We also do a lot of content thought leadership awareness types of assets, right? One motion is, hey, I'm going to do cold outreach and try to grab a percentage of people that are in my talk. The other is to create a funnel, people coming to you, right? Establishing yourself as an expert in the space, doing things like podcasts, other content and thought leadership where people start coming to you. And the beauty of that is, depending on the stat you look at, 80-85% of the sales process now happens before somebody gets on the phone. If they're coming to you, they've already researched you, seen you speak at an event or a podcast or a webinar, and often shortens up that sales cycle.
And what kind of like we're all struggling with SEO now with everyone's leads coming down 30, 40%, maybe even more. And do you see that trend continuing? And like, how do you combat all that?
Yeah, SEO is tricky now. We actually did, I host a podcast also called The Digital Leader Show, and we had an episode a few weeks ago on GEO, Generative Engine Optimization, because what's happening now is people are getting their recommendations not from a Google search that spend all this money trying to optimize to be in the top of the search results, but from AI agents, right? So what can you do to make sure that the AI agents recommend you, make sure that they're portraying you correctly, because the customer, the prospect may never even get to your website. They may be relying on information that was scraped from all over the web about you by an AI agent.
And so, what's your playbook there to show up there and show up there in the right light?
Yeah, it's very new, but one of the things we're recommending is creating experience. So, for example, one of the early adopters of this was L'Oreal, who's making creams and sunscreens and all this, right? And so people are searching differently, right? People aren't necessarily just saying, hey, show me sunscreens. Maybe they are. But what's happening with AI is people are asking more experiential, intelligent questions. I'm going on a trip to a beach town and I need help packing. What should I bring on my trip?
That's interesting. Yeah.
And so now the AI is going to compile a shopping list for you, and in some cases actually start adding things to carts and stuff using Instacart. Really interesting stuff happening. PayPal and Stripe have partnered up to actually do AI shopping now, where you don't even have to check out yourself. But anyway, the AI is going to recommend all these things to you. So you have to have a section of your website, if you're L'Oreal, have a section of your website that not only talks about back to product and features, creating this experience of don't ruin your beach trip, make sure you have the right skincare, right? That kind of stuff has to be there. So when the AI goes and looks and says, oh, wow, that's a good idea. We need sunscreen on this trip, instead of just some of the more basic things that you might think of.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because I guess you ask more pointed searches in Google, but when you're talking to ChatGPT, it's more, yeah,
Figure
I
it
want to
out.
solve this problem. You're like talking to a person, here's what I'm trying to get to, what I want to do. And then, so you got to create content around that.
Yep.
And what's your point of view on influencers? Do you think that seems hit or miss, or I don't know, what's your thoughts around that?
It's hard because the platforms are changing so quickly. Used to be a couple years back, you just found the best influencers out there, you paid them what you paid them, and they had reach because they had 1 million followers or whatever. Most of the algorithms have changed over the last couple years, couple months, where they're not prioritizing your followers anymore. They're prioritizing content, which means you could start a YouTube channel tomorrow, and if you come up with a really good piece of content that people like and goes viral, you can get more reach on that YouTube video than somebody who has 1 million followers would have. So I think they're becoming less relevant. Now, there's still a strategy there. I would say if you can find underpriced influencers out there and do more of a volume play at a lower cost and still identify maybe 20 influencers in your space who are not asking for crazy numbers, that's probably worth it. But back to the AI agent thing, the AI agents are now the influencers. It's back to what we were just talking about. I think more importantly, you want to think about how the AI, Gen AIs, the ChatGPTs are looking at you because they're the influencers now. People are going to start more
Yeah.
and more asking these things what to do and how to do them, and they're the ones that are going to be making the recommendations.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And what about social? Like I've heard some people say, oh, the more you post, that's the way to go. Like how do you approach social from a frequency, content, engagement? Like what are some tips you can give around that?
Yeah, frequency, frequency.
Oh, really? Frequency. Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, because first of all, you don't know what's going to hit. And I've had this even with the AI. So with our AI tool, you can A/B test messaging. So I think I'm a pretty good marketer. I think I write pretty good copy. I'm slightly embarrassed to say the AI beats me every time. I'll do my copy and I'll
Not
have the
embarrassed
AI
about
do
that. Yeah,
copy
yeah.
and the AI wins, right? I think social media is one of those things where it used to be, and I was listening to another podcast recently from somebody in the ad agency space. I forget who it was. They were basically saying it used to be in the marketing space in the ad agency, you'd have focus groups, right? You'd get 12 people in a room, you'd ask them about your product, what they like, what they don't like, what, and then you would take the results of that and build out advertising campaigns. What they were saying is it's the opposite now. You should use social media as your focus groups. So put out a whole bunch of content and see what resonates. See which ones get a following, which ones get comments, which ones get interactions, and then double down on those. If you're spending ad spend, that's what you spend your advertising dollars on. So there's that kind of angle. But I just think frequency, because it's relatively easy and cost effective now to create content. I'm coming from you from a home office now that is closer to a studio than a bedroom, but it's not a full-on studio. And look at it, it looks pretty good, right? You're in a studio, right? So you create, and I also think homegrown content is more authentic. There's a guy that I follow who's a local roofer around here. I'm in New York, and the guy's video, he's a roofer. It's not like the most mind-provoking content in the world, but it's him. It's not like an ad guy. It's not an actor. It's not these super overproduced videos. He's literally going to his job sites, showing you his guys working, getting a customer testimonial, and it's great. And it's authentic. It's real. Like, I feel like I know this guy. And so when I need a roofer, I probably am going to call this guy because I feel like I have some, on some level, I have some relationship with
Yeah.
him because he's built credibility with me over time versus me. What am I going to do? Google it or ask ChatGPT and take its recommendation?
How do you translate that? Like, I get that for a service. How do you translate that if you're like a SaaS software company and you're selling software? How do you make it authentic?
By being an expert regardless of your product. So a couple of years ago, I was involved in the sales process and I was thinking about buying this product, and I got 20 minutes into the conversation and the sales rep says to me, "I don't think we're a good fit for you." "What? You're a sales guy, aren't you?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't think it's done that." I never forgot that guy. I've recommended so much business to that guy because I'm like, I trust him. If I have a question about the product, I know he's not going to just give me some BS to sell me. He basically turned me away because he said it wasn't a good fit. That created a credibility with me. So I think you want to be more, it's always harder if you're a salesperson. If you can establish yourself through content, through social media, through your marketing, through your messaging, as somebody that just people want to talk to get expertise, then sometimes your product will be the right fit and sometimes it won't, and you'll have a relationship for life. I'm going to go back and buy that software at some point just for the sake of it because I trust the guy.
How do you, it's easy to say that, but like, how do you do that? If you're selling some, maybe an AI SDR software or something, and how do you create trust doing that and be authentic around doing that? Is it like the founder presenting it? Is it getting customers presenting it? Is it showing use cases around it? Or a lot of people want to create these very engaging videos, being creative. Like, is it all of the above? Or like,
I think
how
it's
do you
all
go
the
about it?
above. And I think for me, I'm a little spoiled in the sense that I do these conversations and I tell people I was a customer first. I brought this in for me and I've gone through all the trials and tribulations. I've hired and fired probably two dozen SDR agencies, people, tools, or whatever before I landed on this. So, I tell people, and it's the truth. I tell them, like, I will tell you what the pros and cons are. I'll tell you what this is good for. I'll tell you what it's not good for. I'll recommend a competitor if I think it's a better fit for you. Because what's the alternative? You sell them on something that's not a good fit, then they hate it. And best case scenario, you ruined a relationship that could be something later on. Worst case scenario, they start slamming you on social media, telling people the thing doesn't work, whatever. So, we have very specific use cases where we say this works really good and we have the numbers to prove it. And then there's others where we don't really pursue it. And if somebody does, we'll say, listen, we've never tried it. I have one right now. It's a charity. They want to use it for charity outreach, but we've never done it before. So I said to them, I said, I don't know if it's going to work. Let's do a pilot, see if it works. I know it'll chase really well. It'll definitely be less human constraint, less resource intensive for you, but will it convert that audience? I don't know, but I just told them that, and if they want to do it, they do it. But I think it's just that honesty.
Is it just because it's the kind of like tone of asking for donors, which is different than selling a product, so you're not sure the AI will come across appropriately, or why?
It's a
What
little of
goes into that?
that. It's a little of that, although we have the ability to put in knowledge bases. So I have this professional association. So we had to train the AI to say, hey, we're not actually selling technology. We're recommending vendors as industry neutral association. So it took some time to build that knowledge base and to get the prompts right and change that nuance. So that is part of it. Our tool is what's different besides from our tool from Gen AI is it's built for sales. Like it's designed for sales talk, language, mentality. It's not meant to help you troubleshoot fixing your boat or something, right? It's what they used to call narrow AI. It's really an expert in a very specific niche area. For the charity, it's more about finding their target audience. Like it's not as simple to say, oh, I target banking executives from this revenue to that revenue and that in the US. Like they don't. Their target audience is more intent-based. It's a little more complicated to figure out who's willing to spend money on charities. So it's a little bit more about getting the target audience. But we also have clients where they just give us a target account list and we upload that and focus on that. So that's what we're doing.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you actually have to find out the right segment and ICP for them, and which is a trial and error. And
Right,
so it's
right.
a little bit more complex. And how do you go about finding the right ICP?
Interesting, right? Part of the coaching I do is about that, right? So if we get somebody who really has no clue, and this is the other area where we tell people no. Hey, I don't think you're ready yet. We have, yeah, we can, we, yeah, we can test that. But again, the beauty of AI is we can test pretty quickly at scale what messages are working, what ICPs are working, or what have you. And the AI actually does a pretty good job of trying if you have content or a website that you feel conveys the value proposition. The AI is pretty good at turning that into copy. But if you have no idea, then you got to go through that process, right? If I had a client a few years ago where I was actually doing some fractional chief revenue officer work for them, and they had always had like a top three list of things that they did, three values, value prop things. And I was at an event and we were playing around with some other stuff. I was at an event representing them. And I don't know why, it wasn't even on purpose, but I'm networking with somebody and they say, oh, what do you guys do? And for whatever reason, in this particular conversation, I didn't do the standard three, I did five. So I'm like, oh, we do this and we also do this and that. And all of a sudden she stopped the woman and says, wait, what was that last thing you just said? So it turns out number five should have been number one, right? It
yeah,
took some time
good.
To figure that out. But you see all of a sudden glazed over, go, wait, what did you just say? Like all of a sudden perked up. That's the kind of stuff I enjoy because it's oh, all of a sudden now you flip five, make it one. And all of a sudden people are starting to knock on your door more.
And what, I don't know if you specialize in PPC and so it might not be a fair question, but what do you think of PMax? Or you, oh, just let Google's AI figure out how to turn all the knobs to improve your PPC and versus like, what, do you have any thoughts around that?
I don't do it, but to be honest with you, I don't get it. Like as a marketer, I'm always about how do you stand out and how do you differentiate, right? If you have Google doing it, then how do you separate yourself from all of your competitors?
Yeah, you're like training it. You're training their AI to turn the knobs instead of your digital marketing person segmenting and excluding this
you
list.
You don't think they're going to use that for your competitors?
Well, they could for sure. And but they also think it's almost black box too. So like it, the AI is earning over time, but is it, it, you don't have as much control and of what's happening, and the wrong volume is not good if it's the wrong, no value prop or need to that audience. And
yeah, I love all my Google services. So the Google AI overlords don't crash my car later, but I don't trust as an advertiser, I wouldn't trust that. You see what's happened with the antitrust lawsuit, the monopoly that they've created. They bullied a bunch of other people out of the business. I don't know if I like that one. And also I'm very hesitant when I touched on this before to have all your eggs in any one basket. Is very dangerous. You have talked about influencers, right? You have these influencers that have built entire businesses around a single platform, and then they change the algorithm or they kick them off the platform because they don't like what they said, and their entire business is gone. You have Amazon sellers that Amazon decides, you know what? We don't want to have sellers in that space anymore. We want to create our own, whatever, white labeled products in this space. So bye-bye, TikTok gets shut down. So if your whole business was running off TikTok shop, goodbye. It's probably going to come back now. But so any single platform is dangerous.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. No, any question that I didn't ask that you really wanted to share something?
I thought you were going to ask me about AI and data and analytics stuff.
Yeah, go for it.
No, I don't have a specific question in mind. I'm curious. I know you do. You spend some time in that space. Anything that I can shed light on there?
I think a lot of us have a lot of data and a lot of data about usage, and it always just tells you like what's happening, not why. And that's the most important question. So you have a ton of data, you can see why you're getting drop off or what they're doing in your product or what's happening in the pipeline. And yeah, what advice do you have around like helping find the why? Like just because data is a lot about what and not why.
Yeah.
How do you go about solving the why?
It's a great point. I'm fortunate in the sense being involved in the association, I get like sellers briefing me on their capabilities half the day and customers briefing me on their challenges and stuff. The biggest hurdle for AI, at least enterprise AI right now, is that none of these companies can do anything with their data. Their data is such a mess. It hasn't been set up properly. It's siloed. They've acquired companies, merged, blah, blah, blah. Their data is a mess. And you're right. Like I had somebody explain to me their data and analytics platform last week. And it occurred to me that this company, can't mention them, large automotive company you would know, their whole supply chain is based on data that's 4 months old. And that's even if they have access to the data. But if they have access to the data, let's say the data is perfect, it's 4 month old data. There weren't tariffs 4 months ago. There wasn't whatever back COVID, the canal getting shut down, the pandemic happening. Like how do you base your entire, you're a Fortune 100 company. How do you base your entire supply chain on 4 month old data? I'm actually working now with a company that specializes in demand forecasting. So they actually, they combine the historical, they fix the data, and then they combine the historical data with environmental events to predict what kind of demand you're going to need. In other words, what kind of inventory you're going to need in your convenience store, what kind of inventory you're going to need in your field technician's van for the winter time because there's a storm coming up the coast and there's a tariff on China and all these things are made that all these conditions, you throw all these conditions together. And there's actually some interesting AI that can kind of use some predictive analytics and machine learning and actually help you forecast what your inventory should look like, to your point, forward, not backwards.
Yeah. I'll tell you another big problem as we're talking about data and AI is that you may have a lot of data and it could be good, but there's a lot of noise in there. So if you go back to, I don't know how you guys do this, but if you have a very broad ICP, which is maybe not what your an ICP definition is, but if you have this very broad ICP definition and you're just getting a ton of data in around that, it's not segmented enough to, the signals you're getting are too broad. So you're not effective. It's almost probably what you do every day is you're iterating on the messaging and the ICP and you're trying to narrow it to like the people that really have the problem of your solution that you can do the job for them with your solution. And
yeah,
that's another huge problem is just too much data, not segmented enough, and then you just can't interpret the signals properly. You must deal with that.
Yeah, data's gone from not enough data to there's too much data. People, because it's not, data does not necessarily mean insights. And so it's hard to glean insights from data that is not set up properly. Yeah, so we have a couple of people that we recommend for that kind of stuff. And I think that's the biggest, there's a bunch of them, but one of the biggest hurdles between real enterprise AI adoption and where we are now. There's a lot of people that want to do this stuff, but just they can't do it yet because they've got to go through this process of getting their data ready.
Yeah, it's not easy. You can have a ton of data as we're talking about, but it's not easy. And so was that the question you wanted me to ask or is there another one?
Yeah, I think that's it. We like to have conversations about innovation. And I think part of the benefit of getting your house in order with that is that you may not realize what you mentioned, what the ICP should be. There's cases where there's entire business lines that are created out of really interesting insights that came out of the data. So you might start the kind of experiment trying to solve for one thing, and then you find something else, right? I had the former chief digital officer from Starbucks on my podcast a few weeks ago. This guy was like the one who basically invented the Starbucks app. And it seems crazy now, it's such a household name, but back then it was one of the first loyalty apps of its kind and one of the first apps to actually also be a mobile payment app, right? So you load up your funds onto the app, onto your loyalty card and use it. And they originally did it, he said, for the loyalty piece, because they had like a paper card loyalty system before that. But one of the things that came out of it after seeing all the data is they basically had a bank on their hands. All of a sudden they had all this revenue that was on their balance sheet for people that had loaded up their cards, and they were able to do stuff with that, right? They were able to report sales numbers. They were able to invest money. They were able to do a float on interest. There's all these other revenue lines that came out of something that they just wouldn't have been able to do. And he admitted they did not expect that. That was not even in the list of goals for the project, but it's something that came out of it, digital transformation.
Yeah, that's nice when that happens. Usually you're working so hard just to get a repeatable revenue stream. It's nice when you do a loyalty program and all of a sudden you have a whole new revenue stream. Yeah, it's always those stories that you're like, oh, I wish I could repeat that. But some of that is, it's not that easy. Growth is so hard and it's just not easy. You read these blogs, sales-led motion, product-led growth, do these things. And it's just not that easy. It's a lot of experimentation and conversations and iterations. I don't know, what's your point of view there?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the other interview that I did that was interesting was this guy who was an advisor to Satya at Microsoft, CEO of Microsoft, and he had built and sold like three different companies to Microsoft over his career. So I interviewed him, I asked him, I said, okay, what was it was actually a technology question I was asking him. I was asking him, was there a common denominator between, and then he also started like a venture fund. Was there a common denominator between the company, the exits that he had that were successful and the other companies that he invested in, what was the common denominator? And he said, the people. I said, that must've been like a tech. There must've been something where you said, hey, they've got this technology. They don't have this technology. He goes, no, it was a people factor. So with all this stuff said, all this AI, all this conversation we're having, he said at the end of the day, the companies they invested in and the companies that were successful were ones where they trusted the people that were running them.
And what were the attributes of those people?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that I asked him that. I think it was about, trust, energy, the belief that the person was a winner, was going to win at all costs.
Just had the right up, figure it out.
Yeah, just had the right EQ, but it wasn't like, it wasn't like a set rubric is my sense. It was more like a factor, like a special sauce factor that, you just had or you didn't have.
Yeah, nice. I'm sorry we didn't cover more data and AI, but I think it's interesting for our audience to hear some of your go-to-market thinking. And so thank you, Dan. Appreciate you sharing everything with us. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so the website is businesstherapist.org. You can go there, reach out to me there. I'm also on LinkedIn. Our professional association is irpaai.org, irpaai.org. And my podcast is The Digital Leader Show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.